Hey, everybody. Welcome to Therapy Rocks, a personal growth podcast. I'm your host, Signa Darpinian, co-author of No Way and Raising Body Positive Teens, both with Jessica Kingsley Publishers in London. Do you want to better understand what it means to be transgender and how you might provide gender-affirming care? Well, today, we are going to explore some of these concepts and the different ways people may experience them. And here to talk to us about it is Nick Young. Nick is a licensed marriage and family therapist and co-owner of both Catalyst Counseling Incorporated and Valley Crisis Intervention Services, and just happens to be transgender. Nick's personal passion within the field is crisis mental health work. However, in office, Nick and the Catalyst crew help motivated clients, couples, and organizations throughout California to navigate life transitions, conquer anxiety, and manage high-stress environments. Catalyst is proudly founded on the values of equality and inclusion. Nick, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. And every time you listen to, I hear you read your bio, including being the author of No Way. I just, No Way with the exclamation point. Yeah, it just gets me so stoked.
W-E-I-G-H.
Yes.
I know. I love it. I love it. And Nick, I have a funny story about how I met you.
Okay.
I know.
What this funny story is?
You might not know one part of it.
Okay. I'm intrigued.
So I met you in your studio, actually.
Okay, that I do know. I do remember that.
You remember interviewing me.
I do, yes.
And my co-authors for your podcast, Therapist Uncut.
Yes.
With your co-host, Alyssa. You guys were awesome.
It was so much fun.
But what you might not know is that Wendy, Shelley, and I were doing a speaking engagement for Stanislaus County over in the Central Valley region where you are.
Yes.
And we were invited to do an interview after the talk. So it was a long day. And I lied to my co-authors. I told them, I said, it's just like around the corner, but it was 30 minutes away.
Yeah, 30 minutes of lots of farmland.
It's lots of farmland. And they're yelling at me, where are you taking us? You said it was 10 minutes away. I'm like, Anyway, they were so happy, but we had such a great time. And in the end, it turns out my lie was for a good cause.
It was absolutely
and
for
it wasn't,
a good
you know,
cause.
Just a little white lie.
I'm going to have to talk with Dr. Shelley and Wendy about
that.
Yeah,
they're like, this is not 10 minutes. It's not around the corner. Anyway,
there was just 10 more minutes.
That was so fun, though. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely.
That was such a good time. We did not want to leave. So afterwards,
we wanted to keep you. So.
Yeah. So I was happy to talk them into it. But I did do a little white line there. It's a little salesy.
That is good to know.
It's a little salesy.
That's good to know.
Okay. So, Nick.
Yes.
Today, we're going to talk about transgender identity. And I believe that you identify as transgender male. And I thought it might be a good starting place to define this particular gender identity and sexual orientation.
Let's do it. Yeah. So like a lot of things in life and in society, gender is a spectrum that society wants to kind of group into two buckets, male or female. So I would say that me personally, I identify somewhere on the gender spectrum between non-binary and transgender male, somewhere on that spectrum. For me personally, I don't feel the need to pick an exact little ticker mark on that spectrum. So I'm somewhere there. And I know that you had talked about defining gender identity and sexual orientation. I'm going to throw one extra construct in there. So let's talk about gender identity, gender expression, and sexual orientation. So gender identity is going to be one's internal perception of their gender, right? Their knowing of who they are, their experiencing internally of who they are in terms of gender.
Okay.
Gender expression is, I think, what a lot of society that may not be aware of these things might misconstrue as one's gender identity. But gender expression is going to be how we express our gender to the world. So clothing, fashion sense, what might be viewed as more masculine clothing versus more feminine clothing, haircuts, does somebody wear makeup, mannerisms, vocal tone, those kinds of things.
Okay.
And again, that's kind of dictated by society, right? Who says a dress is feminine versus pants more masculine? Well, society does, so that's how we express ourselves in terms of gender expression. And then sexual orientation is going to be defining who we are attracted to romantically, emotionally, in all aspects. So three very different constructs that can definitely have some overlap, but don't have to have overlap.
Do you mean that maybe somebody has an internal identity, but they don't necessarily express that identity?
Yeah, and I think we really get into societal norms here, right? Because somebody is internal, let's just pick an internal gender identity, for example. Let's say somebody does internally identify as male, but maybe their gender expression is more feminine. You know, maybe they wear a merce, like a little man purse, right?
Yeah.
Or whether they, maybe they wear contouring makeup to accentuate their jawline or whatnot. Society would view those as more feminine expressions. However, that person might absolutely identify as masculine. So I think society expects one's gender identity and gender expression to match. And oftentimes they do. However, it's a spectrum. And so sometimes those differ, or there's variations within that.
And when you talk about the spectrum, I noticed on your website, you prefer the pronouns he or they.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I say, I believe you are you identify as transgender male, is that not quite right?
No, I would say that I identify anywhere between non-binary and transgender male.
It's so nuanced.
Yeah,
there's
absolutely.
So much more to it, and which that's the whole point of having you here.
Well, yeah.
It's good. Yeah.
And I think that's something I want to hit on, too, is this is going to be my personal experience with gender, and I in no way represent all of us. It's individualized, right? Mm-hmm. You and I are both wearing glasses. We have very different experiences of our vision. So I might resonate with some people who identify as transgender or who are transgender. I may not with others. So this is my personalized experience, but let's not take it for the whole.
Okay. So, and I know that there isn't one pathway for being transgender, for example. Mm-hmm. So what allowed you to peel away at the layers, you know, to really align who you are and your personhood?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Because as you know, I'm in my mid-30s. Am I? I have to think about that for a second. Yes, I am. And I did not, I'm using air quotes here, come out until much later in life. And for me, I really had to do a lot of introspection. And you talk about peeling back layers. And for me, it was that. You know, I started off initially coming out as gay, and then further on in my process, coming out as trans. And for me personally, I had to really get in touch with my own emotional and physical experiences. Looking back, I recognize how detached I was from my emotional experiences in life, my own body. And I was raised in a small town, very small town, smaller than the town you and I are talking about where I interviewed you in. And I think there was limited exposure to the outside world, and a lot of religious messaging, a lot of black and white perceptions that I adapted and took on as my own. So I developed, for a variety of reasons, my own very black and white thinking around things. So believe it or not, you know, this wasn't an example of somebody knowing something about themselves from an early age and just shoving it away, putting it away, not acknowledging it. This truly was well, that's quite the realization in my 30s here about something that's been present my entire life. So required a lot of introspection and openness to myself, really.
Is that an example of gender dysphoria?
So gender dysphoria, let's define that. Gender dysphoria is a negative emotional state that's brought about between incongruence with one's physical body or how they're perceived by society gender-wise and their own experience of their gender. So I would say that that's probably not exactly gender dysphoria. Gender dysphoria is typically something somebody's aware of. So for example, once I became aware of myself and my identity, my boobs were just not it. I was not about them.
You mean before you became aware of that, there wasn't dysphoria, but then when you did become aware?
And I think that for me personally was probably why I was so detached from my body.
Oh, I see.
You know, I think that different people experience it differently, right? Somebody might be very aware of themselves growing up and feel very uncomfortable about different aspects of themselves. For me, there was just kind of a disconnect. Like if you were to ask me about my first puberty, I don't recall any of it. I have no recollection of that process of adolescence, which is unusual.
What about what is transitioning?
What is it?
Yeah. What is it?
Yeah. And again, I think this looks different depending on who you're talking to. But you could probably classify it into two major types of transitioning. There's social transitioning, which is things that you can utilize or do without maybe medical intervention. So name changes.
That's social transitioning.
Mm-hmm. Changing your gender expression, right? Maybe if somebody goes from wearing a suit and tie to work to wearing something more feminine to work, that would be a form of socially transitioning. Pronouns are an effective way to transition in terms of how society perceives you. And then there's also medical transitioning.
Okay.
Which not everybody on the transgender spectrum feels as though for them they need to engage in any form of medical transitioning. Many do. Some feel like they would choose a couple different types of medical interventions and not others, where some choose every medical intervention available to them. So, again, very individualized experience. And when we talk about medical interventions, there's a wide variety. So one that you'll hear people talk about is HRT, or hormone replacement therapy, which I think ties into some of the episodes you've been doing.
Just coming off a few menopause episodes, yes.
Okay.
And Dr. Louanne Brizendine, who founded the hormone clinic at UCSF, she spoke about surgically induced menopause.
Okay.
Through an oophorectomy.
Okay.
I believe is taking both.
I believe that it's taking
out.
Both, correct.
Yes. Okay.
That is my understanding.
Yes.
Okay. So hormone replacement therapy is a form of hormone therapy that is specific to transgender individuals. So helping somebody that was assigned female at birth transition to a more masculine physical presentation, and also the flip, helping somebody assigned male at birth transition to a more feminine presentation.
And that could be with or without the oophorectomy.
Correct.
Got it. Okay.
Yes. So okay. For somebody born female, they can, and medicine's come a long ways, and I think society has come a long ways in the medical profession in terms of recognizing that it, again, doesn't have to be one or the other, right? You don't have to be full-fledged as feminized as possible or full-fledged as masculine as possible. So there's something called microdosing that is now a thing in the medical and transgender community where you can start off by taking a smaller dose of whichever hormone is appropriate for you. In my case, I did. I started off microdosing testosterone. It lets you kind of slowly ease into any changes that are going to occur, see how your body responds to it. Changes happen more slowly. And then, you know, all the way up to a full dose as prescribed by your endocrinologist. I'm just going to emphasize that for a lot of people in our community where there is limited access to the actual medical care. Some people will try to access hormones through any means possible, you know, off the streets or through this person or that person just to try to transition. And when it's done without, you know, labs monitoring your levels and such, it can get a little dangerous. So I recognize not everybody has that
resource.
Yeah.
Okay. I know. I was thinking of that, though. It's, yeah, as a resource. What if somebody wanted to, but they couldn't? Right.
Which is absolutely a thing.
And what about for you, as you have been transitioning through the microdosing, how would you explain the physical aspects of that or the emotional aspects of that?
It's a trip. Like I said, I'm in my mid-30s and I don't really have recollection of my initial puberty, but holy crap, it's like going through puberty when you're an adult, which is a very bizarre experience.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, those first couple of weeks that I started, I was so exhausted. I didn't, but I could have slept more than my teenager. Think about teenagers and how much they sleep because their body's changing so much.
I follow. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I gained a shoe size in the first. Right? I had to get rid of some of my favorite footwear, Cigna.
Interesting.
Yes.
Okay. And I was just listening to one of my other podcasts on sleep, and teenagers need 9 hours.
Yes.
I think people don't get that, but they need 9 hours. They don't get 9 hours, but they need 9 hours.
Well,
okay.
So does Nick.
Yes. Nick needs nine.
Yes. Nick needs nine. So there's definitely physical changes. And depending upon who you are, some of those are going to be totally welcome. Some of them are going to be uncomfortable. And when you're on hormone replacement therapy, there are certain changes that are going to be permanent, and then there are certain that are reversible. So for example, taking testosterone, certain changes that would be permanent, for example, would be voice deepening. So any degree that my voice is deepened is permanent. If I went off of testosterone, my voice would not change back. Hair growth And let me just say that prior to transitioning, I questioned my Greek heritage a little bit. Like, I mean, look at me. I'm really white. There's not a lot of Greek.
You're wondering, you're going to get out the 23andMe.
You know?
Yeah.
The thought had crossed my mind.
Yeah.
I started taking testosterone. I no longer doubt it because I have sprouted a coat of fur that could rival a bear. So I look like my cousins now.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's here to stay without some intervention. Things that would be reversible would be like body fat redistribution. Right. Mm-hmm. So both ways. If somebody was assigned male at birth and was taking estrogen, body fat would kind of reallocate to more feminine areas. And then if they were to go off of estrogen, then it would redistribute back to the more stereotypically masculine areas.
I am learning so much right now because, you know, we wrote a couple books on adolescence and body changes, yes. And it's all coming full circle.
Yes.
I follow. I understand it much more than I did before. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then, what about the emotional aspects of transitioning?
Yeah. It's an interesting process because there's so, and again, this is just personal to me. Everybody's going to experience it differently. But for me, so we talked about gender dysphoria earlier, mm-hmm. right? There's also gender euphoria. Which is one that's not talked about as much, right? However, that's the joy that comes with finally matching who you are and finally feeling congruent.
Oh, with nice. Yourself.
So there's a lot of that for me personally.
Gender euphoria.
Yeah. It's exciting. Something that I didn't initially pick up on. So we talked about social transitioning. We talked about hormone therapy. There's also surgical interventions and surgical transitioning of various types, right? So for me personally, I had what our community would refer to as top surgery. I much prefer tetus deletus. Just get rid of those boobies for myself. And what was reflected to me by multiple people was my posture change after that. Mm. That's I hadn't realized. Apparently, I slouched a little bit with the shoulders to kind of unconsciously hide those chesticles.
I see.
Yes,
uh-huh.
And then once I had surgery and they were no longer there, I had multiple people in different settings comment on how suddenly I was standing up straighter and my chest was out more and more of a confident, just body language, which is pretty cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So there's all these exciting changes that bring about congruence, but I gotta say there's also the nervousness, right? There's definitely anxiety for myself. Mm-hmm. I'm blessed to be surrounded by incredibly supportive humans in my circle. I've always been blessed. They're great. But there's a larger anxiety outside of that circle in terms of society. And you open yourself up to a lot more scrutiny. You open yourself up to unsafe circumstances and situations potentially. So there's nervousness there. You know, my family travels a lot and road trips are not uncommon. And, you know, in California, you can change your gender on your driver's license, and they do offer a non-binary option, male, female, and non-binary. I, for myself, chose male because if I'm on a road trip through a part of the country that's maybe not quite as accepting and open as California, and I get pulled over, you know, I can't count on being able to maintain my safety in that instance if, you know, somebody comes across my license, whether it be on the side of the road or in a restaurant or whatever it may be. So there's definite safety considerations that make me, even me, who's pretty chill, pretty cool, pretty laid back, make me nervous.
Okay, so on that note, there's this term social contagion.
Mm-hmm.
You
yes.
heard of this? Is
oh,
that
yes.
Yeah, of course you've heard of it. And I wonder if the audience might. I looked up the definition today just in case people haven't
Let's
heard
hear it.
It. And, well, part of the definition from the APA, the American Psychological Association, is the spread of behaviors from one person to another. I thought that was a simple way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
How do other people worrying about quote unquote social contagion impact your identity?
I'm making an assumption here, so let's make sure I'm following you. But when I read this, I assumed that you were referring to everybody that thinks that, you know, being queer is contagious, or that if we're allowed to exist in society, that we're going to groom all the youngins and...
Yes, that is what I mean.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's absolutely the rhetoric right now. And what I have to say to that is that we've always existed. We've always been here. Just, I think you had utilized when we talked previously, the left-hander example.
The left-hander example.
Yeah.
Yes.
Tell your folks what you were telling me about that.
Did you know about that? Yes. I'm new to knowing about that.
No, so my wife is left-handed, so I know this.
Oh, you
yes,
know this.
I know this.
Okay, okay.
I hear about this.
Yeah, so I went way off track and started doing left-handed research.
You squirreled.
I mean,
I
went to the Time Magazine article. There's all these really mm-hmm. famous left-handed articles. And the one that I found the most helpful was talking about how, it posed this question, why are there four times as many left-handed people in the United States as there was 100 years ago? And the answer, of course, or maybe not of course, is historic stigma and discrimination. And it was such an interesting framework the article used to explain that when we allow human beings to be their authentic selves, greater numbers of diverse expression naturally emerge.
And it is the same explanation for transgender factors. And honestly, this is a really difficult time for transgender people because there is a lot of fear rhetoric out there right now. There's a lot of hate, actually, out there right now. And I tend to be a pretty optimistic person. Glass half full, to my detriment sometimes.
Yeah, you exude optimism. When I met you the first time, I'm like, oh my gosh, we love this place.
All right.
Yes.
So, that is me. I tend to see the bright side of everything.
Yes.
And maybe even to the degree of turning a blind eye sometimes. And I've really had to challenge that in myself as a part of this process because it is difficult for a lot of us right now. And the optimistic side of me recognizes that anytime a historically or previously underprivileged class starts to gain rights, there is that counteraction.
Mm-hmm.
Try to strip them. Strip those rights back away.
They get worse before it gets better.
Yeah. In history, there is a reaction to, whichever class of people becoming more visible, gaining more rights. And so the optimistic side of me recognizes that it is because transgender individuals now have more of a place, an accepted place
well
in
said.
Society. If I was me 50 years ago, I would not have access to the kind of care that I have access to now.
That's a great point.
I would not be able to sit on this podcast with you and talk about my transgender experience and journey. Would not have been, you wouldn't have been asking about it.
No, and you're right. Yeah.
It would not have been a safe thing to ask about, a safe thing to talk about. It was, we existed. We just weren't allowed to use our left hand, right?
There exactly.
But as a result, I think it is important to talk about the fact that there is a lot of fear rhetoric and reaction to that negatively impacts our community.
And a part of me was like, do I bring up social contagion? I didn't want to not bring it up.
Yeah.
It's like, let's just take the air out of it.
Yeah. It's a factor. And I think that for those that maybe don't know somebody who's transgender or don't think that they know somebody that's transgender, it is a fear. But let me tell you, we are not out there grooming your children, right? We are not out there that we're just living our lives. And to finally be in a society where there's space to do that, I hope we're able to overcome this wave of anti-trans fear and hate. It's social contagion. It absolutely applies.
I hope
does not apply, but applies, if you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yes, I am looking forward to the evolution of this topic.
Absolutely. Yeah. Me too.
Yeah, I really am. Body image.
Yeah.
That's
like your specialty.
It's
like
my specialty. I can't not bring body image in.
Absolutely.
So in the world of body image, we even have a book called Raising Body Positive Teens.
Great book, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Highly recommend.
Thank you. So Nick, with transgender and gender non-binary populations, body positivity may be invalidating in the context of gender dysphoria.
Ah.
So how has your body image changed since you have transitioned?
That's a really good question. And I think it's absolutely something to ponder because it's a fine line, right? Because we absolutely want to instill confidence in our adults, right? But in our youth. And I love the body positivity movement. Something that came to mind when you brought that up was growing up. And again, this was not something I had awareness of until fairly recently and looking back. But as a kid, I hated the sound of my voice when I would hear it on a recording. And I remember bringing that up, like just physically, like I feel it now, right? I physically couldn't stand the sound of my voice. And I remember when I brought it up to my family, the response was very much, the attempt was to create positivity towards myself, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, nobody likes, you know, it just sounds different because what you hear resonates in your nasal, da, 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 right? Everybody feels that way when they hear their voice. It's your natural voice.
Just love your voice.
Exactly.
Just love your voice.
And the intention was positive.
Sure.
But being a very black and white kid at the time, I took that as, oh, okay, just love my voice. Everybody, nobody likes us. It's different for everybody. When actually, I just hated that in my head, I sounded like a dude. And then I hear myself and I sound like a little girl.
Oh, I see.
So I know that that's not body specific in terms of body weight.
But it is
weight,
if we think of body as more expansive.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Interesting, right?
That is.
Yeah. And then a little more specific with body image, I noticed a change in myself. I would say historically, I was definitely weight conscious. I had definite insecurities around that. Post-transition or as I'm transitioning, I have definitely not lost weight. If anything, I've probably gained. But I don't experience that same. Don't get me wrong. I'm, you know, to some degree, it pops in every now and then, but it is nothing like it used to be.
Why do you think?
Well, I think I was misattributing that discomfort, you know, not feeling comfortable in the way I look. Well, it must be because I've, you know, weigh this or I've gained this much weight since high school or whatever it is.
When
actually, you take away some boobs.
I see.
Like I'm, you know?
Yes, I follow. I didn't expect that to be the answer when I'm giving a talk on body image. And somebody has gender dysphoria and has not yet entered into transitioning. They haven't yet entered their particular type of transitioning or the transitioning that aligns with them. For us to say, like, love your body in the presence of gender dysphoria could be highly invalidating,
yeah,
right? So
absolutely.
We might focus instead on body functionality or body neutrality.
Yes.
But it's interesting because even as I say that, it's like really we hope to have clients inform us about the ways they'd like to be feeling differently because
exactly
what might be validating to one person could be highly invalidating to another.
Absolutely.
So body functionality could sound ableist. So really, client would be informing me, not the other way around.
100%.
Okay. So as you have transitioned or are transitioning, it's like body image satisfaction has improved.
Yes. Absolutely. Okay. Which, again, not the case for everybody, right?
For
me personally, that was my experience. But I love how you said it. We need to individualize our care to each person sitting in front of us.
Right, exactly. I think it's just interesting, but the default would just be like, oh, you know, it's just, well, it's hard to have a body in this culture. And it's like, oh, because it, this or that, but then it wasn't, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, still hard to have a body in this culture,
yes,
which is not coming from me. That's coming from Virgie Tovar. You know, it's just so well said, but yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Until we have that awareness of ourselves, I think we make assumptions that are in line with societal expectations. All right, so I knew that there was discomfort and insecurity with my body. And if I were to take society's framework on what that might be, well, it must be that I've got a little weight around my gut or this or that, right? Society's not talking about, well, maybe it's because you're transgender and you don't want your boobs.
Right, right. So, yeah, that is a great example of how gender-affirming care improves body image.
Yes.
And that's what the studies show. So, speaking of gender-affirming care, what is it?
Yeah.
And how do you think about it for your caseload and your clients?
For us, we think about it from the very beginning. So, before you even meet the person. It starts with your paperwork and your intake paperwork and the way in which you phrase things on your website, right? Are you using very gendered, let's rewind before intake paperwork. How does your website present? You know, if somebody is queer, I should highlight that historically queer had a very negative connotation, and individuals in our community wouldn't utilize that, but we've since taken it back. So I kind of use queer to encompass the LGBTQ plus community as a whole. But if somebody's queer and they're on your website, is it clear that you're a safe space? And you can do that subtly, right? There's ways that you can speak, pronouns, usage, just the way in which you talk about yourself and your services can make it clear. Then fast forward to, you know, if a client's coming in as therapists, there's an intake process and there's intake paperwork. I mean, at our office, we ask your legal name because legally we need to do that, mm-hmm. right? We ask for what name you'd actually like us to use. So some people, you know, refer to that as preferred name. We ask for pronouns. We ask for sex assigned at birth. We ask for gender identity. We ask for sexual orientation. And all of that, it does a couple things. So one, the client filling that paperwork out then knows, okay, this is a safe space. And two, for the muse of the world, maybe it gets somebody thinking.
Oh, I see.
Maybe it asks a question that's never been asked of them before. Because what, we're born and we're expected to be the gender we were assigned at birth. We're expected to be straight. We're expected to be all of these things. And nobody asks. Right. So earlier you asked about the coming out process for myself and getting to know myself. Fundamentally, I am so opposed to the idea of coming out.
You mean that you even have to come out?
Yes.
Yeah. Got it.
Our straight kids don't have to come out.
They don't have to. Yeah, exactly.
Right. And well so said. Fundamentally, I'm opposed to it. But then on the flip side, I have to honor it because of the courage and the agony and the joy and all of the experiences of everyone that has had to come out of their closet, so to speak. So that one, I feel very strongly on both sides, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
But maybe somebody's never been asked that.
Right. So that is such a great example of gender-affirming care mm-hmm. that happens all the way back to, first of all, the website.
Yeah.
Even subtly having words that mm-hmm. imply that you are, let the reader of the website know that you're safe.
Mm-hmm.
And then the paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
All the way to the therapy room.
Yeah, and then once you're in the therapy room, recognizing, I think my number one thing is don't make assumptions. Yeah.
Okay.
Because like my professor, and you might cut this out, I don't know if you have swear words, but
like
one of my favorite professors in college said, assumptions make an ass out of you and out of me. Right?
Yes, that's a good reminder.
And if you don't know about a population, educate yourself. So it is like a lot of things in life. It's a fine line between being open to hearing about somebody's experience and also not expecting them to do all of the educating around it. So do the educate yourself and also be open to hearing about that person's experience. Don't make assumptions. So if you've never talked with a transgender person, to your knowledge, if you've never learned about it and this podcast is the first thing you're hearing about, please don't take my experience as indicative of the whole.
Mm-hmm.
It's mine. All right. And there's so many subtleties and variations that really see the person in front of you. And if you don't know something, ask.
Nick, have we left anything out? So are there things that people might not consider because it's not their experience that you would like them to know?
You know, I think we covered a lot of awesome topics today. And clearly there's, you know, we could have a whole 10-episode showcase on this. But I'm hoping we gave your listeners at least a little bit of information that they may not have had. But I think if I could leave somebody with one piece of tidbit, it's not going to be scientific in nature. It's not going to be about gender-affirming care. It's just going to be that we're human. And I think that there is, again, rhetoric out there that dehumanizes us. And, you know, we're your therapist, your neighbor, your kid's teacher, your veterinarian. You know, and just because you don't know that they're transgender That doesn't mean that they're not. We exist. We always have. And I think I would always challenge somebody when you are scared of something that is unfamiliar to you or different from your own experience, before you make decisions about that thing, have a conversation. All right, listen to somebody else's experience. Listen to each other. Because if all we do is ever talk at each other, I'm not going to get anywhere.
So well said. Well, Nick, I think this might be your first time speaking publicly about your transgender identity.
It is.
It is. And I just wanted to let you know that I am honored that you trusted me with your experience. And like I said before, I'm very excited about the evolution of this topic. And thank you for taking the time to be here and to tell us more.
Thank you for wanting to talk about it and for being a safe place to talk about it.
Well, thank you for joining us today for another episode of Therapy Rocks. And a reminder that you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. We'll see you next month.